Find your way to Ephesians 5. That's where we're going to start tonight. Ephesians chapter 5. You need to be sure and talk to that section. There's a big clump of people right over there.
Yeah, no, like right in the line.
I'm looking over here. I got an empty spot for just... It's great to see everybody tonight. I know that some of you have been wondering, okay, so are we not doing a Bible reading in 23? Do we not have a theme? What is all that about? And so we would just remind you that it is January the 1st.
So the eagerness is exciting.
What's that?
So the eagerness is exciting.
I do like that people are anticipating now. That's great. And so we decided several weeks back that introducing the theme and the reading for 23 probably wouldn't be best on a holiday weekend. So we punted until next week. So we haven't forgotten, and we actually do have one. And so next Sunday morning, we'll be introducing that. So I encourage everybody to be back for that. We do see today as an opportunity. You obviously did with your lesson this morning. There are some things I think that are really relevant around the beginning of a new year. We're going to kind of pick up on that tonight and talk a little bit about time. And so I wanted to go back to Ephesians 5. I actually preached from this a few weeks ago. And we want to go to that exact spot in the text. So look down at verse number 15. I hope this will ring familiar. Ephesians 5, verse 15. Therefore, be careful how you walk, not as unwise men, but as wise. And I'll pause there and say, that's what we talked about, about 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, 2-3 weeks.
And we talked about that wise walk and that thread that sort of runs through the whole tapestry of this letter. Between first about our walk and then making sure your walk is wise and not foolish. But then it is that next phrase that I want us to notice tonight where he says, making the most of your time because the days are evil. And then the contrast again in 17. So do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. So again, that contrasting between a wise walk and a foolish walk. So we wanted to think about time tonight, because I think if at no other time around the new year, we do tend to think about time. I don't know if you're old enough to feel this way, but I've noticed now that 60 is looming like a coming freight train.
Not my problem.
I know. Respect your elders. That you really get the sense how quickly time is passing.
Oh yeah, no, I'm even this morning when Hunter was emphasizing it's 2023. You know, I was just thinking back to remember the Y2K scare. I don't know, I did focus on your talk, Hunter, eventually, but yeah, I mean, you remember Y2K? That seemed like it was that long ago, but 23 years now, almost a quarter of a century, and that's a horrible way to put it. Continue.
No. I was thinking about, y'all remember Y2K and planes falling from the sky and
I remember that New Year's Eve and people were just, you know, waiting for Armageddon.
Were you a teenager back then?
No.
Okay.
Nice try.
Not that young.
Nice try.
Yeah. But I remember as a kid, it wasn't like that at all. Do y'all remember how slow time passed when you were a kid? I actually have this vivid story in my mind. When I was about 8 years old, something happened to my bike. And my dad promised me on Friday night, he said, when I get home from work on Saturday, we'll go buy you a new bike at Western Auto. That's how far back that was. I remember Western Auto, right? Okay. And so I got up the next Saturday morning, and I got to tell you, it just seemed like time was crawling. We had mom and dad had one of those clock radios on the nightstand with the numbers on a spool.
Yeah.
So y'all remember those? Charles is with me on this. Charles has been shaking his head all the way through. There was a spool for the hour and a spool for the minutes and even one for the seconds that would just slowly turn. And I remember laying across my dad's bed staring at that clock thinking, man, could that thing just move faster, right? Yeah. Y'all remember feeling that way as a kid? I wish time would move faster so I could get any of y'all 15? Who's 15? Waiting to get your driver's license, right? Mom and dad aren't excited about that. But it seemed like forever.
A year seemed like a long time.
A long time, yeah. Yeah. And then to graduate and you know, get out of the house, right?
Yep.
Uh, But I have to tell you, now, when you know, I'm lying in my bed listening to the explosions in the street last night, thinking, where did the year go? Were y'all feeling that way? Where did the year go?
Yeah.
It just seemed time moved so much more quickly. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's some spiritual implications of that.
Oh, of course, because time is really a measure of our lives. I mean, right? I mean, that's really what time is about.
And I think there are important spiritual implications to it. It occurred to me as I was thinking about you and I talking about this tonight, that we have a weird relationship with time. In one sense, it's in front of us all the time, right? It's in front of Jeff and I right now. It's 5:06 on the clock behind us, and he and I are thinking about 5:45. So all the way through this, at least one of us will be thinking about, we have an end time coming, right?
And for those of you who don't know, if you ever go in David's office, literally it's clocks everywhere. There's a thing there.
But that's not just me, because you're going to get up in the morning, probably when an alarm goes off on a clock telling you, get out of bed and drink coffee, right? And go to work. And through the day you'll be watching for noon, because that's lunch. We work with the clock all day long, and yet at the same time, sometimes have utterly no sense of what's happening with our time.
Time flies.
It's kind of odd, isn't it? We have this weird relationship with time.
Well, no, I agree. Yeah, and that's the thing, is again, because it tends to be the way that we measure everything in life, right? And so time is how we measure our own lives. And our enjoyment. A preacher even thinks about this in Ecclesiastes, right? There's a great line there in Ecclesiastes about basically, you know, one of the gifts of God is life not seeming like a drag. If we're able to enjoy it, that's a gift of God.
Well, it occurred to me that in the context of the wise walk that he works all the way through this letter, that he wants us to think about time.
Right.
And I think the only way to make proper use of time is to accept some realities about it. So right. We say things like, I wish there were more than 24 hours in the day. I don't know why we say things like that, okay? Because no matter how much we wish, we're not getting more, right? So there are some hard realities we're up against that we must learn to work with rather than just be unhappy.
Right.
About. And so Jeff and I wanted to mention four or five of those tonight for you to think about. I think there's a number up there too. If y'all want to throw in some questions and comments, we'll try to work those through as we go as well. So the first reality that we put on our list was that our time is limited. Again, something that I think we all know is obvious.
But we don't live that way.
But we don't live it. It's so strange.
No, it's right, because we will waste time in a way that we would never waste money. But what's amazing about that is I can always get more money, but I can't get more time. You know, my 21st year is gone. It's not coming back. I waste $1,000. I can work overtime, take a second job, whatever, come back up with that $1,000. But boy, as much as we intellectually know that about time, we fritter our time in a way we would never do with money.
So think about this illustration. I think we're not very careful with our use of water.
Right.
Because here in America, we have water in a seemingly unlimited supply, and it isn't very expensive, right? If a gallon of water costs $1,000, we'd use water differently than we do. But it's cheap. And how many of you, when you got up this morning, you went to the sink and said, oh, when I turn this, I hope something comes out, right? Nobody thought that. Because why? Because something always comes out. There's always, well, except for that little spot last year when it got real cold. But for the most part, we turn on the tap and water comes out. Now, I want you to imagine this. I want you to imagine that somebody comes up to you tonight and hands you a gallon jug of water and says, that's all you get tomorrow. That's all you get for the whole day. And when it's gone, you don't get any more. Do you think we would process our time differently, our water differently, if that's all we got?
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
In fact, we would do some things dramatically differently, wouldn't we? We would make some sacrifices. For example, you might not do dishes all day because I don't have any water to waste. I might need that water to drink.
Right. That's right.
So I think
priorities all of a sudden kick in.
All of the yeah, because we have a sense that it's a limited supply.
Right.
And so I think that the mistake we make is we treat time like it's water out of the tap instead of water in the jug.
Right. And I think what's worth thinking about there too, and you know, again, not that you know, won't elaborate this tonight, but those of you looking for something to write down to go read and think about this week, Psalm 90 is a tremendous psalm. You know, there's a number of Old Testament passages. I was thinking about this actually this afternoon. You know, you were talking about you know us going from Paul and this whole redeeming the time concept, but you know, the more I thought about Paul being an Old Testament guy, there's actually a number because he was a rabbi first. There's a number of Old Testament passages about time, but one of the best is Psalm 90. And to what you're talking about right here, right now, David, you know, among other things, Psalm 90 is a long psalm. It's worth reading and meditating about at length, at, you know, when you have more time than we do right now. But the psalm does, among other things, talk about recognizing the limits of time. You know, whether we really want to accept it or not, you know, 70 or 80 years. Yes, there's a few who make it into their 90s. But let's be realistic. The vast majority of us are going to make it into our 70s or 80s. And even back then, that's what the psalmist kind of says is, you know, that's the upward limit. And the punchline of that is Psalm 90 and verse 12 when the psalmist says, so teach us to number our days. In other words, if, you know, just like you make a budget, you count your money, you know how much you got, because when it's gone, it's gone. Teach us to number our days, to recognize that I've only got 70 or 80 years, all things being equal. Even though I don't know the exact amount, I know ballpark how much I've got to work with. And therefore, I love what the psalmist says about this, that's how we get a heart of wisdom. That living wisely, one of the factors of living wisely is not just the moral and ethical dimension. It's literally starting with the fact that I only have so much time in this world. And so how am I going to spend these precious days, months, and years that I have?
And I think that's especially difficult to do in our youth.
Oh, yeah. Because you do, it's like when you first get that $1,000, you know, the first couple bucks you spend out of your $1,000 aren't that hard to do because it, you know, I've got all this money.
Right.
It's like the tragic pro athlete who's handed millions of dollars and doesn't know what to do with it because he can't imagine it running out.
Right. And I think we feel that way in our youth.
That's right.
I mean, you get on the back end of life and you begin to realize, I've got more yesterdays than tomorrows.
That's right.
And I think you do have that sense of how quickly it's passing. But on the front end, I think it does feel like I've just got this in an unlimited supply. And so that to me is reality number one. We need to live with the recognition that I only get so much. And so it becomes this precious, cherished commodity, not something that can just be wasted on my whims. But now let's transition because there's another piece, and you just kind of brought this up. Not only is our time limited, but that's tweaked by the fact that we don't know how much we get.
Right. Yeah. I mean, most people that I know who've made it into their 90s, they didn't expect to make it into their 90s. Maybe they had a family history, but by and large, we don't expect that. That's just bonus time. That's overtime. Most of us know, you know, that there's only so much, but we really don't know how much.
Yes, this is a conversation I have with my dad all the time. My dad's 82, right?
And he's still here.
Well, and the men in his family died young.
Yeah, so he didn't expect to.
So he didn't expect to get out of his 50s. So man, after 60, he thought he was on bonus time, right?
Right.
And so he used to say, "Man, I can't believe I lived into my 60s." And then he told me after that, he said, "You know, just every year's a blessing. You know, I feel like I'm blessed because I got another year." Now he says, "Man, I just get up in the morning and I'm thankful I saw another day." You know, so I think that's kind of as time passes, the way it gets. I remember I was doing a meeting in Kingsport, Tennessee, and I was reading. You remember back in the day when they delivered the newspaper and it was like printed on paper and stuff. So I was at these people's house. They had a paper, and I was drinking coffee and reading this newspaper. And there were two stories that caught my eye. The first story was the story of a lady that lived to be 102, and she had passed away.
Yeah.
And they had her obituary, a special note about her living to be 102, because that was remarkable.
Yeah, absolutely. Right?
But the front page story was of this tragic accident that had occurred on the freeway the day before. We'd seen the emergency services going to this accident.
No kidding.
And it was really, really sad. A mom and a dad and two little kids, young family, tangled up with an 18-wheeler, and they all were killed in the accident. And I thought, what a really stunning contrast, right?
Yeah.
Now first, you know, whether you're talking about a 10-year-old child or a 102-year-old woman, everybody ran out.
Yeah.
Right?
Everybody's in the same place.
But what they got was different.
Yeah.
And who knew?
Right.
Beginning of that day, that right. would be the end of time. So I thought about James.
Yeah.
Will you go over to James 4? Probably a text that many of us have thought about before. James 4, verse 13. Because I thought that story sort of exemplified what this text is telling us. Verse 13, come now you say, today or tomorrow we will go to such and such a city. It's been a year there. Engage in business and make a profit. Doesn't that sound like the way we talk all the time?
Yep. Going back to work on Monday.
Let's make a plan. When are we going to meet next week?
Right. That's more your question than mine.
Yeah, well, that is true. Then you're going to start hitting me with verse 14. I see where this is going. Yet, you do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. You're just a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes. And that's the story that was on the front page of the newspaper. Right. Who knew?
Right.
What plans must that family have had? What have they been planning to do and things that they were going to accomplish and college savings for the kids? All of that now meaningless.
Snuffed out.
In a moment of time.
That's right.
And so he says in 15, instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. But as it is, you boast in your arrogance, and all such boasting is evil.
And I think, David, you took us to James 4. You know, there's again another Old Testament psalm that I think sits well with that. It talks about exactly that and illustrates the arrogance. I mean, we get that intellectually, the arrogance of thinking I have tomorrow when I, you know, God guarantees my life, not mine. But Psalm 39, again, another one of those psalms you're looking to read and meditate this week. Psalm 39, and I'm going to start reading in verse 4. O Lord, make me know my end and what are the measure of my days. Let me know how fleeting I am. And the psalmist is actually going to use the image of the mist or the vapor, depending on your translation. Behold, you've made my days a few handbreadths. And here's where the arrogance comes in, by the way. And my lifetime is as nothing before you. Surely all mankind stands as mere breath. We boast as though we have eternity in our own hands. God can count on being around. He's God. You and I, not so much. Behold, you've made my days a few handbreadths, you know, a little span of the hand compared to, you know, a mile or some greater distance. My lifetime is as nothing before you. Surely all mankind stands as a mere breath or mist. There's that line. Surely a man goes about as a shadow. You know, what's a shadow? A shadow, there's no substance to a shadow, and as soon as you turn on the light, what happens to a shadow? It's gone, just like that. Surely for nothing they are in turmoil. In other words, we waste our lives thinking about what we're doing is so important. Like you just illustrated, that poor family. You know, they had plans for their kids, dreams, savings. Dad probably had a retirement account for when he got older. Surely for nothing they're in turmoil. Man heaps up wealth and does not know who will gather it. So much of what we spend our time trying to accomplish is like an anthill that's just, you know, pushed over by a foot. You know, the ants never knew what hit them. But I like that psalm as a counterpart to James 4 because I think it's the same issue. But again, the arrogance of thinking that we are more than we are. We are mists and breaths and shadows. That's all we are.
And I think the point is, because not to make this too dark, but to deal in reality.
Well, that's the important part.
To deal in reality and appreciate that time isn't this abundant commodity to be wasted on my whims.
Well, and to go a step further, what we're saying in the second point is, and I don't have control over it, because ultimately I can't control whether I get 70 years, 80 years, 102 years, or 39 years. I have no control over how much of it I even get.
All the more reason to be wise about how we make use of
it. That's right.
So that's really where we're going with this. Not to be dark and say, oh, we just don't ever know, but to say that time needs to be more precious to us. We need to be more thoughtful about how we spend this precious commodity, like the water in the jug rather than the water out of the tap. Okay, so that's one and two. Here's reality number three. We all have more to do than time to do it. If you are the exception to that rule, you can just go ahead and go on home. We're done for tonight, right? But I relate to the Toby Keith song, My List, right? It's an old song. Never thought you'd come to church on Sunday and hear someone quote Toby Keith. But
didn't know you listened to country.
Dude, I listen to everything except opera. But yes, I do listen to country. You learned something about me tonight.
I did. I really
did. So here's how the song My List opens. He says, under an old brass paperweight is my list of things to do today. Sound like your life? And he gives a whole list of things that he does. And then he says, I cross them off as I get them done, but when the sun is set, there's still more than a few things left I haven't got to yet.
Right.
Now you know why I like that song too, right? Because that is my life. And I wonder as I say that, if it's your life too. I even have a list. It's not on a piece of paper.
Right.
It's a digital list, right?
You are an Apple guy.
I am an Apple guy. And it pops up on all my devices so that I can keep up with my list, right? And I don't mark them off, but I click a box so that they disappear when they're done, which is really kind of a cool feeling. I accomplished something, watch it go away. The only problem is, and this really happened to me last week, as I clicked one off, it suddenly came to my brain, ooh, but I need to add these two more things. Is that your life? The list just keeps growing. And when the day is done or the week is over, in my case,
there's still stuff there.
There's always stuff to do. Or even if I got through the things that I'd put on my list, I think of more. Yeah, but there's this and this and this that also needs to be on there, stuff I have to do.
Right.
And what I get the sense is that that's not unique to me. Everybody is that way, right? So what really discourages me is you retired people, when y'all say, I'm busier now than I've ever been. I don't know how I had time to work. I wish y'all quit saying that. Because it's discouraging to the rest of us who are thinking that when we retire, we're going to get a little more time. And you're saying, yeah, no, give up on that. I tell you what I really think is funny is, I'm sorry, I'm getting ready to throw you guys under the bus, but it's when young people talk to me about how busy they are.
Yeah.
Like college students say, oh man, I've got like 4 exams next week, and I'm so, so busy. And I'm thinking, yeah, and it ain't going to get better. It's going to get worse, right?
That's right.
4 exams and pay the mortgage. Yeah, it's coming, right?
Yeah, we haven't told them there's no more spring break yet.
But I thought about that because all the college students, you're on Christmas break. Remember the first summer where you realized you didn't get summers off anymore?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was a smack upside the head. So it just kind of gets worse as you go through life. And I would add this, that one of the things that happens to us past 60 is because we can see our days coming to an end, there's an urgency that takes over.
Yeah.
And now there's some things I really want to get done because I really don't know how much time I have left to do it.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I remember reading a Jewish writer years ago. He used a phrase I have never gotten over because it was so profound. And he was talking about the context of us not using our time rightly and wisely. And he called it embezzling our lives. You know, that just we waste it just like a corporate crook wastes the money, embezzles the money, and you get to the end when the company's bankrupt and it's all over, there's nothing left, and you realize you've wasted it all. And that phrase, I've never gotten over that we embezzle our lives because we do exactly what you're talking about.
So some realities I think grow out of that. If we've got more to do than we've got time to do it, two things. One, I think we need to ponder seriously what it is that we don't get to. So if there's stuff that keeps falling to the bottom of the list and it gets bumped off, what is that? Because I don't know how it is for you, but I have these urgent things that shout for my attention. You guys are part of that problem because one of the things that will shout for my attention all week this week is about 10:15, depending on the song leader, next Sunday morning, because it's my turn. And I'm gonna have to get up and preach. So there is work to be done this week, and at the very top of that list is a sermon to be prepped for 10:15 next Sunday morning. Because I mean, I know we got good shepherds here, and I know they're good, caring guys, but I'm just thinking if I got up next Sunday and say, you know, the sermon got bumped off the list, folks, I don't have anything for you, that would not be good. And I think our guys are pretty gracious, and maybe if that happened once, but I could tell you if 2 weeks later I got up and said the same thing, You're probably getting a new preacher in 2023, right? The urgent things shout their way to the top of the list. And oftentimes, things that are really even more important than those things quietly slip to the bottom and fall off, and we don't ever get to them.
Right. Because we're not rightly triaging our time and focusing on what's most important. I mean, we do that with our, again, our money and our budgets, right? The mortgage is a higher priority with our money than, you know, than say the cable bill. You know, we said it ought to be, hopefully it is. And we recognize if something's got to go, the cable goes. We don't sit there and tell the mortgage company. So we get this with money, but it's fascinating how we don't get this with time. And that, you know, especially when it comes to the end, when it comes to standing with the Lord on the last day, we don't get to justify how we've spent our lives, which is really, when you stop and think about it, one aspect of what we're giving an account to before God is, you know, how we've lived our lives, which is how we've spent our time. And so we don't get to say to the Lord, well, you know, I just didn't get to some of the things, Lord, that were important to you, because just like you can't do that with the shepherds here.
Well, so I think we need to ponder what those things are, because I do think there are things in our life that are just really, really important that don't shout for attention. So let me illustrate that. Have you ever gone 2 or 3 days without praying? I mean, like, none at all. And it dawned on you after 3 days, I haven't prayed. What's wrong with me? Have you had a moment like that? How does that happen? You see, prayer is one of those things, guys, that doesn't shout its way to the top of the list. If you get to the day and you didn't pray, nobody gets fired, nobody dies. It just didn't happen. But if over my lifetime, prayer is one of those things that constantly just gets bumped down and then off, and then bumped down and then off, I never pray.
Right.
And there is a spiritual consequence. There is a relationship consequence between me and God when that never gets addressed. But it doesn't shout for my attention every day.
No, and what's fascinating about that, David, it is, and again, this is to add a little twist to what we're talking about, the use of time. You're right, prayer often does fall off our lists because it does not seem like anything bad is going to happen today. We live by tyranny of the urgent, as Stephen Covey used to call it. And so, you know, but one of the reasons I do think that prayer is so easy to see it as less than necessary to survive for today is because we think that too much depends upon what we do. And we forget the fact that God, as one writer once put it, God has already created the world, doesn't need our help maintaining it. And so maybe if we would actually focus on the spiritual things that God says matters, but don't always seem to in our tyranny of the urgent style of living, maybe we'd be in a better spiritual state in the first place, because we begin to realize that far more depends upon us being in right relationship with God, which means being dependent upon God, than thinking we must do all of this ourselves or the world will fall apart. The world's not going to end if you don't get certain things that you think are necessary, but spiritual needs forsake and will bring about the end of spiritual life long before we even realize it.
Right.
I remember, I think it was Martin Luther, I think, who once wrote or said something along the lines of, I have so much to do today that I cannot get by on less than 3 hours of prayer. And part of why that still sticks in my head, I can't remember where I read that. It was a long, like many years ago, but why it still sits in my head was, I remember, you know, because I live the opposite. I'm tempted to live the opposite, right? And I was young when I read that, especially. I was in school. I'm busy. And so you sit there and say, the busier I am, the more I can't sit still and pray for, especially hours on end. And Martin Luther saw it exactly the opposite. The busier I am, the more I need divine aid, divine guidance, and the more I need to sit still a little bit longer to remind myself again, God makes the world, not me. He doesn't really need my help to get the things that matter accomplished. Yeah. And so it puts me back in my place a little bit.
And I think that's one example of what could just be multiplied of examples of really important things that don't shout for attention. While you were talking about that, I was thinking about Bible reading.
Yep, and, same thing.
So we'll wind up putting a little foundation under what we talk about next week when we talk about our Bible reading. But again, if I don't read the Bible today, nobody gets fired and nobody dies.
Right.
But how many times have you seen someone who spent 20 years of neglecting the book And now they're in a marriage that's in a mess, or they're in a mess with their kids, or their life is just generally a mess.
Right.
Because there's no spiritual underpinning there. There's no, well, you read from Colossians 1:9. They haven't been filled with the knowledge of his will. And so there's no spiritual wisdom and understanding to help them walk.
And now it's too late. They need it now, but it's too late.
But the knowledge isn't there to help me today that I need today.
That's right.
So we need to ponder, if we've got more to do than time to do it, what is it that's not getting done? And then to add to that, and I think this is really important, we need to abandon the myth of free time, right? Because I think that's what helps us justify neglecting things today. So here's how it works. What I say to myself is, yeah, I know I didn't pray today, but when I get done with this semester, I'm not going to be taking as many hours, and I'll have more time to invest in spiritual things. Or, and I saw this in a couple of college towns I worked in, young people would say, look, I don't have time to do spiritual things while I'm in college. I'm getting my education.
Right.
I had a young college student tell me this one time. Listen, I'll show up on Sunday, but y'all can't expect me to do anything because this is the time I'm getting my education. And when I get done with school, then I'm going to start thinking about stuff like that.
Right.
Because, you know, after graduation from college, you have so much free time, right? I'm glad y'all are laughing. Y'all pay attention to that.
Yeah, they don't get it.
And then, you know, you're starting out in life and you're just so busy, you know, maybe you bought a house and you're figuring out your marriage and you're starting your career and you think you're busy until you have a child. Yeah, right?
Or four.
Yeah. Oh, don't bait me on that, man. That's not fair. And then, I already mentioned what the retired people are saying, that they've been busier than they ever have been. Here's the reality.
Can I add one more thing before you finish that list? And then when I finally have retired, my health starts to decline and my energy is lower. And so all of a sudden, even when I think I've got time, I want to
see, I didn't want you to say that. That's why I didn't go there.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, thank you.
But no, I mean, just add it to the list. I mean, then when I think I've got time, I really don't even have the energy or the health to do it. I mean, so yeah, this idea that it's going to come this perfect spot, that really lights my fire because you're right. I mean, I think about, because I went through this stage too where, you think, I'll get more, certain kinds of work done when I get older or I'm out of school or whatnot. I'll get the kind of reading that I want to get done or get the kind of writing done I want to get done. No, it doesn't get any easier. I mean, you begin to look at those who've actually accomplished a lot in their lives. They did it in 15 unideal minutes snatched here and there from an otherwise busy life. I remember one member of the church I knew who wrote a lot of books in his life, and he talked, and he was a college professor. And so I thought, man, college professor, he was held an endowed chair, and so he has to teach one class every other semester, got lots of free time to get stuff done. He said, nah, I've got to meet with graduate students, got to do, he said, if I want to get my passion done, my writing done, I got to get up at 4 and 5 o'clock in the morning and do it before I ever go to campus. And so this idea that there ever comes this idea, whatever it is in life that you want to get done or you need to get done, this idea that there ever comes an ideal time when it will be easy and convenient, that just never arrives.
So I think that's important to say because it's our justification for not doing it now.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I just won't do it now. So can I be real plain with you about something before we move on? Because this is really critical. And it's going to be a little bit toe-stomping, but maybe we need to get a little toe-stomped on this one. If I'm too busy for it now, then it just isn't that important to me. So if I can't pray now, it's because prayer just is not high enough on that priority list. And if I can't spend some time to do a Bible reading, it's just because Bible reading isn't important enough. Because brothers and sisters, we make time for what really matters to us. Will you ponder that? If it is important to me, I will make it happen. And so it isn't really about the season of life I'm in or what I'm up against or what's on me and all that. The truth is, if I'm under an enormous amount of stress, I need to be talking to the Lord right at that moment more than ever before.
Right.
And I need His wisdom to guide me more than ever before. It's just, do I see those things as critically important? That's really the issue. I think we need to spend some time pondering that. We're going to be wise in our use of time.
Well, and to take that one step further, David, if we look at time as a way of measuring or quantifying the substance of our lives, then what we're really saying is, what is my life? And I, you know, and I've said for years, you can learn a lot about what somebody thinks their life consists of by looking at their calendar and looking at their checkbook register. And you will find out what their life is, how they define life very quickly by where the money goes and where the time goes. And so again, you know, this whole idea, what you're getting at is, what you're really saying is, the substance of our lives must be built intentionally, and that starts with intentionally giving time to the things that matter. And the irony is, the things that matter are the things that will transcend time. Like you keep on coming back to prayer, rightly so. But part of why prayer is so important is because prayer is the foundation in the growth of our relationship with God, and that is something that we take with us, not just in this world of time that is passing away, but beyond it. And so the irony is spending time on things that will transcend time in the end is really what we're talking about.
It's, you said it earlier, it really comes down to the priority game.
Sure.
What are the things that in my mind are the truly important things? Because I will do
That's right.
those things.
That's right.
So let's give you a fourth reality, because we're up against the reality of the clock, right? So if we are correct that we have lists that are full and only so many hours in the day, we're not going to get more than 24, then here's the fourth reality. I can't add to my list without knocking something off. You buy that? I can't add to my list without knocking something off. So that means when I commit to this activity with that choice, I am at the same time by necessity saying no to something else. Does that follow? And I think it's vital that we wrestle with both sides of that equation, because sometimes we adjust or we defend our investment of time by saying, this thing that I'm doing is a good thing, or it's not an evil
right.
thing, or it's a worthwhile thing, or
but
whatever.
That's not the issue.
But it's only half the equation.
Right.
So let me go back to your jug of water. If somebody gave you 1 gallon tomorrow and said that's all you get for the whole day, you could probably spend the gallon washing breakfast dishes. Yes? Especially if you have Jeff's family. That's a lot of breakfast dishes, right?
There are.
Could you go through a gallon?
Easily.
Easily, right? And that would be an appropriate use of the water. There's nothing wicked about using it that way.
No, clean kitchen, man.
I like to eat from clean dishes.
Absolutely.
And so it would be appropriate to use it in that way. However, if on the back end, using the gallon for dishes meant, yeah, you're not going to have anything to drink the rest of the day, I would reconsider.
Right.
In fact, I think I could live with dirty breakfast dishes in the sink. My wife couldn't, but I could live with dirty breakfast dishes in the sink if it meant I was going to have water to drink the rest of the day.
Right.
You see how that works? You got to consider both sides of the equation. It isn't just, is this thing I'm spending on my time a good thing, an appropriate thing, a worthwhile thing?
Right.
It's also, okay, but what am I giving up because I'm taking it on?
Right.
So think about that. Is there anything wrong with investing time in your job, maybe working overtime to finish a project or to earn a few extra dollars? Anything wrong with that? Or is there anything wrong with kids playing sports? My kids played baseball for a decade. We invested time in that activity. Anything wrong with that? Anything wrong with going out and doing things with your friends or having a hobby that you spend time to? Maybe you're a gamer. Anything wrong with getting online and blowing up stuff with your friends? I don't do that. That's the best I could. That's the best way I can describe
it. So you've been told.
So I've been told, yes. Nothing wrong with that, right?
Right.
When does it become a problem? What about when my job and its demands are so steep that I have nothing left for my spiritual life. Come home late every day, I'm exhausted, and right to bed, no time in the book, no time to meaningfully pray to the Lord. What happens when that's the reality? Maybe I need to reconsider the commitment I'm making to my profession. Maybe I need a different job. I mean, I know you're not supposed to say that.
You're right. Or quit thinking about it as a career where I'm trying to get to this point where I may, you know, have a certain title or make a certain amount of money or whatever it may be.
I had a friend years ago that had been away from the Lord and had come back and was really interested in being involved with the Lord's work. One of the things he wanted to do was teach Bible class.
Yeah.
But he worked a weird swing shift, which meant like he's here this Sunday and then not here again for three Sundays. It was weird that way.
Right.
And we just couldn't use him in a class.
Right.
And so he came to me a couple of months after discussing that. He said, put me down for the next quarter, I'm going to teach. I said, well, what about your job? He said, oh, I changed jobs. He said, a position came open, the warehouse, it was a demotion, it was less money, but I'm going to work Monday through Fridays. And I'm off every evening, every week. And he took a demotion, he took less money, because he wanted to have that time back.
Right.
To invest. Now, I'm not bringing that up to say that's what everybody ought to do. I'm bringing it up because I think for some, even some disciples, that wouldn't even be on the table.
Right. And you know, David, listening to you say all that makes me think of something else that I think is important to make explicit. Just like we cannot look at others and how they spend their money, you know, and make a judgment about how we should spend our money. Because everybody's circumstance is different. Some of us make more money, some of us make less. Some of us have more children to provide for, some of us have fewer. I mean, not all our circumstances, not all our responsibilities, not all our obligations are the same. And so to look at each other and how we, you know, and say, well, they spend their money on this, so I should be able to spend my money on this or have as much to spend on this. That my life circumstances are different, my responsibilities, my obligations are different. That's true of time too. You know, I think too often we look at others and we sit there and say, well, this is, you know, they've got time to do this, so I should be able to have time to do this. But not necessarily true given how God may have placed me in life with the obligations, responsibilities that I have. We can't look at each other and say, well, if they've got time to do it, I've got time to do it. That's not, you know, that's not true financially, and that's not true time-wise either. We need to look at our own lives and our own obligations before God, our own circumstances, our own responsibilities, and choose the, you know, righteously, wisely, the priority to spend the time that we have, just like we have to do that with our own money.
When you were saying that, is it okay if I quote Dave Ramsey? Because you keep bringing up money.
Just this once.
Just this once, okay. If you, any of you follow Dave Ramsey, I know Robert does, he's out there somewhere. Dave Ramsey is fond of saying, live like no one else so you can live like no one else.
Yeah, exactly. Don't try to keep up with others.
Yeah. You may not want to spend time the way other people do because you don't want the life that the investment they're making will produce in the end. And so what we know, going back to the text that you used in your lesson this morning, a secondary text in Colossians 1, if I don't spend the time filling my mind with the knowledge of His will, I'll never be able to walk in a way that pleases Him.
That's right.
So if the walk pleases, if I want the walk that pleases Him and brings the joy and all the blessings He talks about later, the strength, I have to make that investment of time in being filled with the knowledge of His will, which means I may not have time to game like my buddies do.
Right.
And I may not be able to be committed time-wise to my job. I may have to take less career-wise so I can say yes to other things I want to be doing family-wise or spiritually, things like that. And I think we need, let's get to the last reality, and that is that God expects us to use our time wisely.
Right.
That's the obligation put on us in Ephesians chapter 5. So there are hard choices that have to be made here.
That's right.
And it's a priority.
And thus wisdom.
Yeah, and a priority game. Well, and the wisdom part comes into being able to see that longer, that longer picture.
That's right.
How life mapped. You live like no one else so that you can live like no one else.
That's right.
Longer picture, I want that life that is produced by doing these things now.
Right.
So I'm going to make the investment, maybe someone else isn't. Maybe.
And you just use that word investment. Again, to use that money-time comparison. I can consume my money now through, you know, frivolities, or I can invest it so that it's there and long-term comes back to me even more valuable. And these are the choices we make just with time, just like money.
Somebody texted in and said, if our main desire is God, prayer and study a priority, I think there's some missing words there. Do we deceive ourselves? Is it too painful to admit that God is not our priority?
Oh, sure.
And so that is the tough part, getting underneath what is really underneath the struggle.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, David, I remember one time someone once, you know, parenting advice said something about, you know, people talk about, you know, they spend quality time with their kids. And so, as opposed to quantity time, right? That old saw, you know, well, I don't have a lot of time for my kids. I'm busy with work. But when I'm there, I give them quality time. And I remember someone saying once, or reading it somewhere, I can't remember now, but someone once said, no, the way kids spell the word love is T-I-M-E. You know, there's no, you know, the way kids look at it, there's not necessarily a distinction between quality and quantity. Kids spell love with time, you know, through time. And so the same thing I think is true of God. You know, we spend our time, just like we spend our money, we spend our time on those things that we love and are important to us.
And I think that in this age, with so many distractions, mm-hmm. that it's even more critical that we see the value in that admonition, make the most of your time. Because it isn't like we're sitting around twiddling our thumbs.
Yeah, and it's fascinating that Paul had, you know, if Paul could say that 2,000 years ago, and what we now look at is a relatively slow, boring culture with very, you know, there was no Netflix or Disney Plus, there were no theme parks to go visit.
No iPhones,
no iPhone,
Facebook.
Yeah, no social media to scroll. I mean, that's it. And yet Paul could warn them about letting their time fritter away.
Yeah.
Think about what he would say to us today.
It's interesting. Do you ever look around waiting rooms, like when you're at the doctor's office or whatever? Do you ever look around waiting rooms? You know what people used to do in waiting rooms? Sit there and awkwardly stare at each other, right? Or hope there was a magazine.
I was about to say, it was the magazine, man, the three-month magazine.
Maybe, that's 8 years old, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
What do people do in waiting rooms? Yeah, everybody's staring at that. We're busy. We have all this stuff to do, all this stuff to occupy our time. Yeah. And so with all the distractions, it's so much more important to be disciplined and make sure we're making the most of it. I thought the bell was going to ring at 5:45. Am I just wrong about that?
I think it's 5:50.
Is it?
Something like that.
I have not got this new Sunday night thing down yet. It's still messing with me on the time. Let's talk a little bit about, because I still had this item on my list, about some wise investments of our time in 2023. And there's the bell, yeah. Right? So you heard us say some things, you know, the obvious things related to our spiritual life, prayer,
right.
Bible study, vital things. But we've also tapped into family.
Right.
And, you know, the need
investing our time in others, not ourselves.
Yeah, well, and yeah, that was actually, somebody sent a note about that, to invest in serving others, invest in serving the lost in the coming year. We have such a vital mission, brothers and sisters, to be reaching lost people around us as a church family. We need to give our time and energy to that, and to some kingdom labor, to find some way that I can be doing stuff that helps the kingdom of God. That ought to be part of what is happening with my time. And so rather than just letting the day happen to us, I think we need to stop and ponder at this time.
Seize the day.
What am I doing? I like the old song. Do you remember the old song, Into Our Hands?
Yeah, absolutely.
We haven't sung that since I've been here. But
I remember it.
Do we sing that here? Do y'all remember that song?
Into our hands the gospel is given.
Swiftly we're turning life's daily pages. It's not a song about time, but it's a good time song. Swiftly the hours are changing to years. Three questions. How are we using God's golden moments? Shall we reap glory? Shall we reap tears? Two things I really like about those last three questions. One is that he reminds us that even our time is God's.
Yeah,
and
we're
stewards of it.
That's right.
And secondly, that eternity is at stake.
Yeah.
This isn't just about how I'm getting through the days, the weeks, the months, and the years. It's about eternity.
Right.
And what I do with my time matters. Eternally. Let's pray together before that next bell rings. Father, we are excited about the new year before us and its opportunities. And we pray that our thoughts about time tonight will help us focus on you and the important things that you have for us to do in your kingdom. Help us be consumed with that, zealous about it. Help it to be the most important things in our life. In Jesus' name, amen.